Good afternoon. I'll call this meeting of the House Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order. Up first, we just have approval of the minutes. I'd ask Vice Chair Agbaje if you had a chance to review the minutes.
Yes, so moved.
Vice Chair Agbaje moves the minutes. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, we have two bills up today. We have House File 950 with Representative Brand, the Local Housing Trust Fund bill, and we have House File 11, Bring It Home bill. And so we are going to start with Representative Brand's bill. I think he's here, maybe coming in the door. There he is. We speak his name and he appears.
Good afternoon.
Representative Brand, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Hey, members of the committee.
Representative Brand, quick, I will first move that House File 950 be laid over for possible conclusion in an omnibus bill, and I will turn it to you to present your bill.
Thank you very much. So local housing trust funds provide a flexible funding source for communities to address local housing needs. These funds help counties and cities meet their local housing priorities and positively impact Minnesota communities. Families, young professionals, elderly, veterans are all among those that have been positively uplifted by these funds in the past. These dollars are an investment that leverage public and private resources and jumpstart housing projects that draw investment and jobs to those communities. There are now 20 local housing trusts in existence, all with remarkable track records in their communities across the state. There is enough interest that there are potentially another 35 that might come on board as a result of this funding in future years. The funding would be used to make grants, loans, loan guarantees for the development, rehab, or finance of housing. Matching other funds from federal, state, or private resources for housing projects. Or provide down payment assistance, rental assistance, and home buying counseling services to new home buyers. A local or regional housing trust fund that would be eligible for these funds must report annually to the local government that created the trust fund. The local government or governments must post this report that they are provided on its public website. There is accountability, oversight, and the public have access to the use of these funds. All told, there are 13 cities and 7 counties already in existence. So I did a little bit of research. Chair Howard, you have one in Richfield. Chair Hassan, I don't think she's here today, and Representative Agbaje has one in Minneapolis, in St. Paul. Representatives Perez Vega and Hussein have one in St. Paul. Representative Kozlowski, you have one in Duluth, and Representative Myers, you have one in Minnetonka as well. And so I just wanted to end my remarks by inviting public testimony on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Brand. Up first, we have Jill Henriksen from the Minnesota Housing Partnership. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair Howard and committee members, for the opportunity to testify on this bill today. My name is Jill Henriksen. I'm a community development manager at Minnesota Housing Partnership. MHP's community development team has expertise working directly with communities, regions, individual nonprofits, and Native nations across Minnesota on their housing and community development goals. From innovative community planning practices and knowledge of complex federal grants, our expertise helps to create effective and lasting collaboration among community leaders. Collectively, our team has provided assistance in all counties across Minnesota. So that's something that we're proud of. Our work includes assisting with single-family development, multifamily development, permanent supportive housing, workforce housing. We help with funding applications and building support for new projects and programs by assisting with authentic community engagement and outreach. In addition, we have assisted communities in creating local housing trust funds and helping set up the programs that are funded by those funds. Some examples of how local housing trust funds can help communities include bringing in a funding source when there might not be any other funding sources available in a community, being able to make decisions in a timely and efficient manner, the ability to create your own programs based on their own community's needs. And as you had mentioned, the funds can be used to leverage Minnesota housing funds, lots of other funds, including the Federal Home Bank and others. Specifically, we've worked with the Crow Wing County HRA's Local Housing Trust Fund, which was funded through a local levy. We've assisted them with program guidelines for their programs consisting of home rehab, down payment assistance, and multifamily development gap funding. Swift County HRA is another county that has created a local housing trust fund through a levy, and they're now using their funds to help renovate a USDA 515 apartment building in Kirkhoven that houses low-income seniors. It's through our work in partnership with local communities that MHP is committed to assisting communities in establishing local housing trust funds. Our work in this area started by providing Red Wing HRA with technical assistance a few years ago. Together, we identified the need for enabling legislation and state matching funds to incentivize more communities to dedicate local resources to the Local Housing Trust Fund for their own communities' housing needs and to be able to plan for future housing needs. At MHP, we created a guide, kind of a how-to manual to establish local housing trust funds that includes best practices. And we've got expertise, like I said, in housing and community development. And we believe that local housing trust funds are a critical tool to support new housing development and to preserve existing housing in communities all across the state at the local level. Lastly, state matching funds will double the impact of small communities, you know, efforts to raise funds. These matching funds, while they may seem small, have an immense impact for small cities and counties across the state who are committed to meeting the housing needs in their communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Daniel Lightfoot with the League of Minnesota Cities. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Daniel Lightfoot, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. The League represents 837 member cities across the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chair, members, I want to first of all thank Representative Brand for carrying this bill, and certainly you, Mr. Chair, for carrying this bill in the past. Local housing trust funds are a critical resource for so many of our communities across the state, and we hope that 20 becomes 40, becomes 60, becomes 80, and certainly the matching grants outlined in this bill will help not only support existing local housing trust funds, but also help especially smaller local units of government create new ones. Cities are certainly concerned about the lack of affordable housing opportunities across Minnesota, and understand that both state and local governments, as well as private entities, have a role to play in addressing the affordable housing needs in our communities. To address this issue, cities are often looking for flexible resources to leverage both local and private investments to spur the development and rehabilitation of affordable housing. Local housing trust funds, as was mentioned by the Minnesota Housing Partnership and Representative Brand, are a proven, important, and flexible resource that cities can utilize to leverage private support and leverage non-state resources to address locally identified housing needs. The $10 million in state matching funds for local housing trust funds outlined in this bill will help support, as I said, existing trust funds and jumpstart the creation of new local housing trust funds to address affordable housing needs across the state. I also want to thank the Minnesota Housing Partnership for all the work that they've done in helping communities learn and establish local housing trust funds. We've seen 20 trust funds to date be deployed in cities and counties. They can be used in many ways to address locally identified housing needs. We've seen them utilized for things like down payment assistance, the provision of gap financing for developers of affordable housing, assistance with naturally occurring affordable housing preservation, as well as owner-occupied housing rehabilitation efforts, and of course, the creation of new housing units as well. We also know that through surveying a lot of our member cities that dozens of communities around the state are interested in creating their own local housing trust fund, but often lack the resources to get a fund off the ground. And so some seed capital from the state to assist some of those communities with getting a fund off the ground will hopefully allow for more utilization of communities of this important resource. And we certainly hope that the state and local partnership can be continued on this effort. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, I'm happy to stand for questions as well.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on the bill? If not, I know that Representative Johnson has an amendment. Would you like to move your amendment, Representative Johnson?
Yes, Chair.
Representative Johnson moves the A1 amendment. Would you care to speak to your amendment?
Chair Howard, members, this amendment deals with what we received the other day, the OLA report on, deals with nonprofit organization grants, but it also deals with grants that the state of Minnesota provides. Looking at some of the numbers, we probably put out 2.462 billion dollars in grants every biennium. $2.462 billion in grants, and $1.28 billion per biennium to nonprofits across the state. In the OLA report, it talked a number of different issues. One I've already had a bill drafted to deal with before this report came out. I'm just waiting for it to get jacketed. But it deals with oversight by the state on these grants, and in this amendment. Grants, the first part deals with administrative costs. I know in the Office of Justice Program, the grants administration fee is limited to 2.5%. I changed that a little bit, and this percentage is up for debate in all the bills depending on what's going on. I know we had one earlier that needed, I think it was around 10% to cover costs in that housing bill. And that's something we can look at down the road when that bill comes forward. But in this, to get it started, I have capped the state at 1%, and those actually doing the grants, their portion at, I believe it was 2%. So for a total of 3% of the grant, out of $10 million, that's $300,000 to administer the grant. The second part deals that if it is to a nonprofit, that nonprofit organization has to provide the Attorney General, who has oversight over nonprofits, and this body, the Housing Committee, both in the House and Senate, copies of their 990, which is a publicly available tax form that has to be filed every year, and this would be due to. This committee by the 15th of January of their most recent 990. So we have an opportunity to look at, see where the money is going, making sure that there's nothing looks odd. It also gives, have it go into the Attorney General's office. Like I said, they are responsible for the nonprofits and has oversight over them. So he has also has an opportunity to look at all the nonprofits that are getting state taxpayer dollars. If he finds something like odd that pops up, like the Feed Our Future or Feed Our Children that or whatever program that was, he can get a handle on it quicker so we don't have so much waste, fraud, and abuse in our system. And the third issue is before any grants could be developed, and that's in the OLA report, that there needs to be some oversight. In the OLA report, it says only 17 of the 24 broad recommended practices from the Inspector General at the U.S. and the U.S. Department of Justice are even implemented in the Office of Government or a Office of Grant Management, but it also states in there that a lot of the other departments are not even coming close to following those 17. So what this does is requires the agency with oversight over the grantees that they have to have policies and procedures in place before the grants can be put out to make sure that the proper oversight is being done. And some of the things that we're looking at, the report says, is looking for red flag issues before they're gone out. Inadequate financial management systems, inadequate separation of cash-related duties, inadequate internal controls, no written accounting procedures, no record retention policies. Have they had prior fraud? Those are things we need to look at before some of these grants are issued, and that's why I'm hoping that you will accept this amendment, Representative Brand, because we are the responsible to make sure that oversight is done on these grants, that the funds are getting to where they need to be, and that funds are not being siphoned off to improper issues.
I'll go to Representative Brand. Comment on the amendment.
Well, I guess I'd first start by saying that I like the bill the way I have it, and this amendment showed up late last night. We were on the floor together. Nobody contacted me beforehand about this amendment, so I kind of feel like, as a matter of course, I know if I was to amend a bill, I'd want to talk to the bill author beforehand. And so that's just a matter of course for me and how I would personally like these things to happen going forward. I mentioned that there are several members of the committee who have trust funds within their communities. And so I would invite them at any point during this conversation to please tell me where there's an example of some waste, fraud, or abuse that's happening in your communities with regards to these local trust funds. Lastly, I would just go back to my testimony when I said that these funds go through cities and counties to those local trust funds. Those trust funds have to report annually to the cities, those local governments, about what's going on with those funds, how they're being used, and there's accountability, oversight, and the public is invited to take a look at a public website already. I think this is a layer of duplication that we don't need right now.
And I'll open up for if members have comments on the amendment. I'll just make a few points. One, I do think program integrity and those kinds of things are important. I will just, for the record, the OLA report mentioned does not have any purview over the bill that's before us or the next one, and does not deal directly with these housing issues. So I sort of see this amendment as a bit of a round peg, square hole situation. The other piece I just wanted to mention is, as a previous author, the enabling legislation that was referenced by testifiers, that was a bill passed by Representative Haley and Senator Weber, did cap administrative expenses, and that is at 10% under current law. Are there members that have questions or want to speak to the amendment? Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brand, this is a great bill that I'm hearing in front to support those funds that are allocated to organizations such as in my district, Trust Home Fund of the Neighborhood House, that's been a nonprofit historical landmark for District 65 in our city of St. Paul, and have been in existence since 1897. And so it's great to see that these are the places that are trusted in our community, that have establishment and history in the state in this community, and also are there at times of crisis when our communities need them at most. Thank you.
Are there any members that want to speak to the amendment? If not, I'll go to Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, members, Representative Grant, I apologize for not getting to you last night. Things were, had a few things going on that I was dealing with some of the amendments and some of the bills last night. I apologize for not coming and talk to you. But grants are grants, whether it's a nonprofit or anywhere else. Some of these housing authorities that the grant money goes to are nonprofits. we need to make sure that this is the tax, state tax dollars money. We're responsible for that. Not a city of Minneapolis, not a city of St. Paul. And Representative Brand, you mentioned a number of different ones that had them, but you did not mention one from this side of the table.
I did. Minnetonka has.
Yep. Okay, you didn't mention one that's not in the metro area. Or Duluth. That, to me, that's a metropolitan area. Most of us are in small communities. And yes, we do have them. I have two cities that have them. But they're small, run by the city. But this, like I said, this is a state taxpayers' dollars, not city dollars. It's this body's duty, this committee's duty, to have oversight and make sure that these funds are run properly and making sure that our departments that are using it have the tools, and they are told to use the tools to make sure it's done correctly. And with those 990s for these nonprofits, gives us an opportunity to actually see who's getting the funds, because we don't know. They were hundreds and hundreds of grants given out to nonprofits that we don't know who they are. They'll give this body an opportunity who's getting these funds so we can actually look at them. One of the nonprofits that were in this committee already this year, they had a total income of about $6 million, yet the executive director had a compensation package of close to $500,000. I think that's excessive. So we need to look at what these nonprofits are doing. And with this amendment, it gives us an opportunity to do that. So please ask that you will accept this amendment, that we can start having oversight and do our duty as legislatures.
So with that, I'll call the vote on the A1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. No. The amendment is not adopted. So we're now on to the bill. And I had Representative Nash on to the bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To the author, lines 1.15 through 1.19 are your technical assistant grants. Can you tell me more about what those are? Because it doesn't really spell it out. And I'm just trying to figure out what that is and what it does.
Representative Brand, or maybe to one of your testifiers?
I would phone a friend on that one, or maybe even fiscal staff or staff would have an answer for that. I would think that the technical assistance, just from my research entailed, would be for if they are going to start a new trust fund or if they are looking at a project and are looking at the full scope of the project. But, Libby can also provide some more information.
Hi, Chair Howard, committee members. My name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at Minnesota Housing Partnership. So when we initially wrote this bill in 2017, we worked with the community of Red Wing, which was attempting to establish their trust fund at the time. And in partnership with Red Wing and in partnership with the chief author at the time, Representative Barb Haley, we identified the need for technical assistance so that smaller communities that do not have experience establishing a trust fund, or oftentimes a staff member who's dedicated, has three different job descriptions, may not have the expertise on how to establish a trust fund. So a community could apply to Minnesota Housing that would control those portions of the funds and ask for resources to provide direct technical assistance to them. We have experience providing technical assistance. We know that some communities need this. Some communities only need the manual that we've produced, and that would be sufficient, and others will need a little bit more support, and hence why that was written into the legislation.
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Back to the author. Whoops, almost lost that. On your effective date, you've got July 1st of 23, and you know, irrespective of what you feel the OLA report has on this, I think it's certainly a wake-up call for a lot of agencies, groups, and organizations that do receive grant money. I think that anybody who is receiving that is going to want to put up some guardrails in light of what came out of that report. Is July 2023, it seems very quick for that amount of money to go out, given the fact that the OLA report just came out and said that in aggregate, Grant administration needs to have a little more oversight and guardrails put around it. I'm just trying to be the voice of good governance here, not pointing fingers at anybody. I'm just saying, in light of that report, wouldn't it be prudent to maybe kick the effective date down the road a little bit to say, because we want to administer this well, shouldn't we first take a half step back and say, are our processes good? And if they are, then proceed. But if there are some things that resonate with what came out of the OLA report, maybe we make some changes. So if you would.
I'll go to Representative Brown. I will remind folks that the OLA report, again, does not have bearing on the administration of local housing trust funds. But Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nash for the comments. What I would say is that I represent a part of the state where we are in a housing crisis. The greater Mankato area is the lowest unemployment rate in the entire nation, and we have 1,000 slots of child care that we need to deal with. We also have workforce housing that we need to deal with. In St. Peter, my hometown, we have 6 houses for sale. We should have 30. We have a waiting list to get into apartment complexes. We have a need for housing for veterans. We have a waiting list for 55 and older community-type housing as well. I think kicking this can down the road doesn't help us provide those opportunities that we need to keep addressing the needs of the communities, not just in my area, but across this entire state. I do appreciate your conversation around this, but I do think that this $10 million investment is really important, because it's not going to be where we give the money to them today and tomorrow a new development will pop up. It takes time to build that. It takes time to leverage some of this money with private interests and other entities like the federal government to provide these housing resources. And so I would say that this is appropriate for what we're asking for.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, and I'll follow up on this. And Mr. Chair, you've deflected away the OLA report from this area. Here's what I think your average Minnesotan wants to know, that the spotlight that the OLA put on grants in general should encourage anybody who writes or receives grants to maybe take a half a step back and say, this is something that we should look at more closely. Because even though they haven't had an issue and it wasn't an area of study, I think that it sends a pretty good message to anybody who is going to be doing this, that they should take a proactive and preventative step in putting up some of those things. And Representative Brandt, I'll tell you, your area is not unique. Carver County has the same problems. We have not enough starter homes being built. We have problems with the number of houses on the market. And as you've heard me say, this is one part of a very large equation that has to get addressed. But we're not addressing some of the other problems. So I like this bill. When my colleague, Representative Barb Haley, who's one of my closest friends, authored it, was supportive of it. So I'm not saying no, but what I'm saying is I think that there are some additional steps that we should be taking in light of what has come out recently, irrespective of whether or not you were a target of that. We should all say throughout the entire legislature, let's tap the brakes on grants and, one, first make sure we're doing it correctly, Mr. Chair, and, two, in the interest of not having a problem down the road, implement some basic guardrails that were articulated in the OLA report that are good and best practices moving forward. So not trying to be Johnny Raincloud here, but what I'm saying is be smart in how we roll these things out, because haste will oftentimes allow for mistakes to happen, and then next thing you know, the OLA comes knocking on your door, and then things go sideways. So I think that $10 million is a lot of money. And up here we deal in millions of dollars like it's budget dust. But to the people back in our districts, $10 million, again, you heard me on the floor last night, if you go up and ask somebody, hey, do you think $10 million is a lot? They're going to say, yeah. So I think we would want to be as good a steward with this as we can. You know, we could kick it to August or could kick it to the end of the year and say, you know what, we're going to be deliberative and make sure we got it right. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick clarification on that. In one of your statements, you talked about, it's been a couple of different places, talked about workforce housing. I'm just unclear. Would it be possible for some of these dollars to be used for workforce housing, or is it specifically excluded?
Representative Brand or Ms. Murphy?
Chair Howard, committee members, yes, these resources can be used for workforce housing. The only there's two restrictions on the funds. One, the funds need to be used for housing. And then two, there is an income cap. So for multifamily rental, it has to serve households no higher than 80% of area median income. And for single family, no higher than 115% of area median income. Those meet the challenge fund requirements and are fairly sufficient for meeting a lot of workforce housing needs across the state.
Thank you.
And the Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. First, I just want to say thank you to Ms. Murphy for coming into my office. It's always, you know, being a new legislator, when people can come in and we can talk about this, it really helps hone in some of the questions and better understand these bills. So thank you very much. Representative Brand, you had talked a little bit about time and it was discussed. I'm just wondering, from starting at section 1.2, the 8 years, and interested how that came about. And I know from talking with Ms. Murphy, you know, you got to have some time to have these funds used, but I don't know, is 8 years too long, not long enough?
Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Myers, I would say that at the end of the day, some of these projects, I think, are going to take that long just because of the horsepower that's needed and some of the leverage that we need to, the projects, individual projects would need to have in order for them to build. You know, if you've got a part-time city administrator, for instance, and a lot of communities have that across the state, it becomes a little bit of a challenge for horsepower. And then, of course, you know, it becomes a lot of conversations have to occur with the federal government or private entities that want to support, you know, these types of projects as well. So giving these folks latitude, I think, is an opportunity for them to get the project finished. And then I guess the other thing is that they would still be made to report annually on where the funds are, where they're going. If they're sitting in a bank account, that would be a pretty short report, right? And it would be information that the counties and cities would be using to help maybe better understand the challenges of financing a project like that, and maybe giving those cities and counties some opportunity to say, okay, well, it's been 3 years, nothing's been funded. Let's talk about what we can do to leverage some of that stuff too. So I would say that that would provide just that extra latitude.
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Brand, a final word to your bill.
Well, I really appreciate the conversation. I really appreciate the testimony today. I will just draw your attention to the Red Wing Housing and Redevelopment Authority had a letter of support. The Metro Cities Association of Metropolitan Municipalities had a great letter of support as well. And then there's about a 4 or 5 page document by the Minnesota Housing Partnership that I really want to draw your attention to, because there's a lot of good information in this. And so, you know, I think the biggest thing is there are 13 cities: Alexandria, Bloomington, Duluth, Eden Prairie, Edina, Minneapolis, Minnetonka, Northfield, Red Wing, Richfield, Rochester, St. Louis Park, and St. Paul, and 7 counties that already have this: Chicago, Crow Wing, Goodhue, Hennepin, Lake, Ottertail, and Swift. And so where these folks are, it's working. And I hope that we can have this funded so we can continue to see it work in other places that maybe they're not already in existence. So thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Representative Brand, and thank you for carrying the torch on this bill that I've handed off to you. So I'll renew that my motion that House Bill 950 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And with that, the bill is laid over.
Thank you very much.
And with that, I'm going to hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Igbaje.
As you get settled at the desk, Chair Howard, would you like to move your bill in front of the committee?
Yes, Chair Igbaje, so moved.
Okay. I also see that you have an author's amendment. Before we move that DE1 amendment, did you want to explain the amendment briefly?
Yes, Chair Igbaje. The DE1 just gets the bill into the shape we'd prefer it in with consultation with stakeholders.
Thank you, Chair Howard. With that, I move the DE1 amendment to amend House File 11 to the shape the author wants it. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right. Your bill is amended. Please, Chair Howard, proceed.
Thank you, Chair Igbaje and members of the committee. This bill, House File 11, the Bring It Home bill, is a bill that brings forward a solution that matches the scope of the crisis that Minnesotans are facing by ensuring that everyone can afford the roof over their head. And first, I want to thank Beacon Interfaith Collaborative and Lee Blondes in particular for beginning this conversation and building a statewide coalition to move this vital bill forward and to have this conversation about a big solution to have big impact here in the state of Minnesota. And here's why it's so important. As we've heard in this committee so far this session, there are over 500,000 Minnesotans who are paying more than 30% of their income in their housing, and more than 200,000 Minnesotans are paying more than 50%. And this crushing weight of housing is having serious negative impacts, with evictions on the rise, housing instability for families. In Hennepin County last year, family homelessness was up more than 200%. And the ripple collateral consequences of Minnesotans not being able to afford their homes can be seen in depressed ability for families to earn a living, poor health outcomes, poor educational outcomes, and the list goes on. Some Minnesotans do have access to a housing voucher through the federal government that provides assistance in housing stability. And for those Minnesotans, that voucher is a lifesaver. But the reality is only one in four Minnesotans who qualify, who are eligible for a housing voucher, actually receive one. And that's because of persistent underinvestment by the federal government in housing. We've heard from folks in this committee that have talked about years-long waiting lists for folks to access these housing vouchers. And what this bill would do, the Bring It Home bill, would create a state-based rental assistance program to fill this gap so that everyone who qualifies for a federal housing voucher would receive one. This bill is the right solution at the right time, and we have the opportunity to make sure that we're addressing our historic economic challenges that Minnesotans are facing. To the specifics of the bill, the plan is elegant in its simplicity because we rely on the existing infrastructure of local housing authorities to already understand local needs to manage and distribute funds in an easy, seamless manner. The legislation would fill the gap for hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans who qualify for the voucher, bringing stability to renters, landlords, and communities. A couple other pieces I would highlight. We include language to make sure that we're equitably delivering these resources across the state, because this is a statewide problem. The language also creates flexibility so that this program can be tailored to meet the needs of Minnesotans and be administered in a way that works well for Minnesotans and landlords. I liken this to taking the elements of the Section 8 program that we know work well, but having the flexibility to make it work even better. And again, because we're using existing housing authorities, we're not setting up a large-scale, brand-new, state-based program, a rental assistance program. And in this way, we're able to more efficiently deliver resources to Minnesotans to help them afford their housing. Members, no single policy initiative can do more to directly eliminate homelessness than this one. Because when rent is more manageable, budgets stretch further and families can afford their essentials. And a word about the cost. You have the fiscal note that estimates the cost of this bill at $2 billion per year. Yes, that is a big number. But I want folks to take a second and process that, what that means, that for $2 billion we could functionally end homelessness in Minnesota. That's a policy choice. That's a policy proposition for us to consider. And what is not in the fiscal note is the ripple benefits of creating a Minnesota where everyone has access to stable housing. Our state would need to spend significantly less on things like the renter's credit or other social programs. Shelter, county services could be reduced significantly. Economic activity would increase because Minnesotans would be more able to work and spend money in their communities. And we would see better achievement in schools from our kids. We'd see better health outcomes. And again, the links and the intersections of the positive benefits of a proposal like this go on and on. Members, the reality is the state spends less than 1% of its budget on housing. and it's this consistent underfunding that has played a huge role in creating this housing crisis that's widened racial gaps, prevented our state from progress in so many ways. And so this proposal helps us break out from the status quo and deliver a solution that meets the scope of the problem. The stability of home touches on every aspect of our lives, and this proposal would create a guaranteed foundation that every Minnesotan could afford the roof over their head. And I look forward to the discussion and the testimony on the bill this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Chair Howard. We will move on to testifiers. The first on my list is Lee Blons. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Vice Chair Abaje and members of the committee. My name's Lee Blons, and I'm the CEO of Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative, one of the organizations leading the Bring It Home Minnesota campaign. Bring It Home Minnesota is supported by all of the major housing organizations in the state. As Representative Howard said, it's a simple but profound investment in the stability of home for all Minnesotans. This rent support makes up the difference between what it costs a landlord to provide a decent apartment and what a family can afford to pay for rent. It's a win-win for landlords and tenants. Very simple. What makes it transformational is bringing this home for all Minnesotans. We need to create a solution as big as the problem. We are asking you to truly grapple with the scale of the problem of affordable housing in our state. Over 200,000 households, counting children, that's over 500,000 Minnesotans, who live with housing insecurity every month. This is a statewide problem. As our handout illustrates, over a third of renters in almost every county in Minnesota cannot afford their rent. This housing policy is the only investment that's guaranteed to deliver affordable housing to every corner of the state. This will be transformational for your communities, for your constituents. It will deliver affordable housing to every House and Senate district in the state. Imagine what it means to have a home that's constantly at risk because you're paying 40 or 50 or 60% of your income toward rent every month. Any one problem, a few less hours on the work schedule, a car repair, an illness, can plunge a family into housing instability. When my son was young, around 6 years old, he told my husband that my job was more important than his because I help people. My husband, who's a psychologist, explained to him, Mommy helps people on the outside and I help people on the inside. And Tyrone said back to him, Daddy, don't you know that when you help people on the outside, you also help them on the inside? I've worked in affordable housing my whole life, and it is so painful to see a hard-working single mother struggle to provide for her children, working two or three jobs to pay the rent. Or seniors, like my brother-in-law, who's working a job at 78 years old to afford the rent. He's left wondering what happens when his health deteriorates. I believe in my heart and soul that a stable home is the most important thing that we can provide to relieve the stress and fear gripping our communities. Some people will say that we can't afford Bring It Home Minnesota. But let's be clear, it's not expensive per person. It's because of the number of people who need help that we get the fiscal note that we do. I say that we can't afford to not make this investment in the health and stability of our communities. We have a wonderful rent subsidy program, Homework Starts with Home, to help families with school-aged children at risk of homelessness. Last year, it helped 191 families, a fraction of the need. Homework starts with home. Do we truly believe that? Then how do we leave so many children in the state without a stable home? We spend around 25% of our state budget on education. And as Representative Howard said, we spend less than half of 1% of the state budget on housing. If you increase that investment to around 6% of the state budget, you end not only homelessness, but housing instability for all Minnesotans. Just think about the educational impact on children that would stay in the same school throughout the year. Our largest line item is health and human services. We understand that health outcomes are driven more by your zip code than by the acute care you receive in a hospital. Homelessness and housing insecurity has become something that pediatricians have started to ask parents about in their health screenings. Imagine what it will mean for the physical and mental health in our state if everyone had a stable home. One last closing thought for you. When Beacon opened one of our supportive housing communities for young people experiencing homelessness, a young woman who had gotten a key to her new apartment had not spent the night in that apartment. And when staff asked her why not, she said, "My friend Tamika doesn't get her key until today. We've survived on the streets together for the past 5 months, and I couldn't leave her behind." What a message for us adults. Let's not leave anyone behind. Let's bring it home for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll move on to the next testifier. The next testifier on the list is Heather Alden. Please introduce yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Mr. Chair Howard and members. Thank you, Mr. Chair Howard, for bringing forward this bill. My name is Heather Alden. I am a social worker in St. Paul Public Schools and supervisor of our Project Reach program, which supports all the students and families in St. Paul Public Schools who are experiencing homelessness, in foster care, and those who may be precariously housed. Increased abilities for families equals increased ability for students. When families can pay their rent and then have money for food, utilities, medical expenses, child-related expenses, then they're able to stay in their homes and anchor themselves in a community and provide stability for their children. Children's stability opens avenues for academic attainment and educational growth over time. Safe, stable, and affordable housing during childhood sets the stage for later success in school. Children are profoundly affected by their environment during key developmental stages. Chaos in their neighborhood, frequent moves, exposure to pollutants and unhealthy conditions inside their home all leave a deep and lasting impression. When housing consumes too much of a household's budget, kids may not have enough nutritious food to eat or ready to learn. Teachers see the ramifications of these conditions all too clearly in the classroom. Currently, there are 931 students identified as homeless in St. Paul Public Schools. Let me say that again, 931 students today. Those are children birth to five in our early childhood. Those are children in school, and those are children in transition. Many of these parents are working one and two jobs and just had life happen. A car breakdown, a house fire, a lost job, underemployment, and they ran out of options. Rental assistance would allow families to have an option to provide housing stability for their children and open avenues for educational stability and attainment. Rental assistance could ensure that all Minnesota children have a safe, secure place to sleep and give them the stability they need to succeed in school. Rental assistance could help reduce racial inequities and the shameful housing disparities that hold Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities in our state. Rental assistance could help communities strengthen by making sure their families can participate in their community and their children thrive, which would help Minnesotans thrive for generations to come. For those who have lived in poverty and experienced homelessness in their lifetime, that is trauma, which remains in one story always and is never an experience a parent would want to repeat for their child. For those who have experienced homelessness, they know the stress of not having a place to stay, food to eat, watching the weather, and fear of safety coupled with the lack of access to medical care and educational stability. For this, the opportunity for rental assistance can create an opportunity to forgo that happening to many of our residents in Minnesota and rewrite the narrative for those who live with this in their life's journey. I would encourage you to please pass House File 11, the Rental Assistance Bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier on the list is Jorlene Bryant. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Given honor to Chair Howard, members of committee, my name is Geraldine Bryant. I am here today as a resident of Aon. I have been asked to speak about the importance of passing House 511 bill. This bill is designed to help low-income individuals and families who spend more than 30% of their income on rent. It would help diversified communities. I grew up in Mississippi. My mother was a sharecropper. And when the landlord decided he wasn't going to farm anymore, you didn't have a place to stay anymore. It would have been beneficial to have a bill like House 511. Today is my birthday. And I am 75 years old. And to this day, when the landlord decides he doesn't want to own your building anymore, you don't have a home anymore. After my husband and I divorced, I lived at a shelter. I worked as a caretaker there to pay the rent for my room. I also worked at Minneapolis Community and Technical College as a clerical worker to help with food, bus money, and those things. Eventually, I found out that Section 8 would help me pay the rent if I applied. From the time I put my name on the list to the time I got the voucher, it was a little bit over 5 years. It was a long time to wait. But my Section 8 voucher gave me the opportunity to not to worry about the rent anymore. It gave me time to study. I took classes to get a liberal arts degree, a bachelor degree in human services. And I am now a few classes away from a master's degree in children education. I volunteered as an English and a reading tutor in Richfield, where I live. I was an assistant community organizer at Crossroads. I felt like I was at home because I lived there for 15 years. Then a landlord bought the building and threw out Section 8 tenant. I moved into another building, Section 8 building, likewise. The same thing happened. After a couple of years, I found out Aon had bought Season Park apartments in Richfield. And I decided to apply. Therefore, I applied and I qualified. Now, this apartment that Aon bought, he fixed it so that no other landlord could come in and buy this building and throw out Section 8 tenant. That's what I'm talking about. I have lived here now for almost 6 years, and I finally feel like I'm at home. At my age, knowing I'm not going to have to move again, it's a safe haven. It's a peace of mind. You need to know you're not going to have to worry about the rent. You need to know that just because you are poor, you still matter. Having a house voucher means that I can give back to my community. It means that I can get an education. It means that I can grow And there are thousands of other Minnesotans who could have that same opportunity. If you would pass this bill, I ask you to support and pass House 511. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you again.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you, audience. We want to make sure that we can hear everyone's testimony, but we do appreciate the enthusiasm. The next testifier on the list is Dana Hiltunen.
Chair, if I might just quickly thank Jerlene and wish her happy birthday.
Yes.
And just let Jerlene know that I don't know if I would be in this position as the housing sheriff not getting to know Jerlene. I met Jerlene when she was a tenant organizer, when she mentioned when I was a young city council member in Richfield. She called me about once a week and helped educate me and become such a strong advocate for housing. I'm so glad she's spending her birthday with us today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Lean. Dana Hiltunen, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Howard and members of the committee. I'm not sure how I got put after Jerlene. Kind of feeling a little boring now, but we'll see how this goes. So my name is Dana Hiltunen. I'm the executive director of the Virginia and Eveleth Housing and Redevelopment Authorities, and I'm testifying today on behalf of Minnesota NARO. Minnesota NARO represents over 140 housing authorities across the state, which provide affordable housing and support livable communities for Minnesotans through a variety of programs funded by federal, state, and local resources. One of the key programs is the Housing Choice Voucher Program, which you've heard of referred to as Section 8, which serves over 31,000 households across the state. Rental assistance helps very low-income households afford housing, resulting in greater job stability and higher school achievement. On average, families are able to stabilize to a point where they can afford their rent without assistance in 3 years. The proposed Bring It Home Minnesota program is modeled after the voucher program. By modeling the program after the existing voucher program, Bring It Home will utilize existing delivery systems already in place with experienced providers. Currently, there are not enough vouchers to serve eligible households, and many of our local programs maintain waiting lists. The Virginia HRA operates the voucher program in northern St. Louis County. Our service area is a rural area spanning from Ely to west of Hibbing and Cotton to north of Orr. As of today, we are serving 510 households with vouchers. Our public-private partnership worked with 193 private landlords in 2022. Last year, our HRA did not have enough funds to support the vouchers that were in use, and in my 10 years since 2012 at the HRA, we have never had enough funding to support all 588 vouchers we should be able to issue under the program. In addition, we currently have 523 households on our waiting list, with an average of 78 applications being accepted on a monthly basis. We are utilizing all of our vouchers and simply do not have enough to fund the need in northern St. Louis County. In the metro area, housing authorities have to limit the number of applicants they place on their waiting lists in order to be able to serve them in a timely manner, meaning 3 to 5 years. However, the number of applicants far exceeds the slots available. Both St. Paul PHA and Metro HRA opened their waiting lists in 2022. Metro received 11,000 applications for 2,000 waiting list slots. St. Paul PHA received 6,000 applications for their 2,000 waiting slots. In addition to being beneficial to working families, rental assistance strengthens communities. Property owners in urban, suburban, and rural Minnesota communities use rental assistance payments to pay property taxes and maintain their properties in good condition. This private public collaboration is a vital piece to providing affordable housing and thriving communities. Besides being an administrator of the voucher program, I am also a past recipient. When I was in elementary school, my mother and I lived in an unstable housing condition. My single mother worked multiple jobs and we still needed assistance to make housing feasible for us. This was obviously several years ago, and the main difference I see from then to today was that when our small family needed help, my mother was able to walk into the HRA that I am now the executive director at and received a voucher immediately to look for housing. This voucher kept us from living in a dangerous situation, provided stability, and kept me in the same school district during a very difficult time. I know that I was able to do well in school and had numerous opportunities because of this help. When I hear the struggles and how long families need to wait for stable housing, I know that I am fortunate this wasn't the case for me. 35 years ago, we did better for my family, and I know we can do better for families needing housing today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Helton. The last testifier we have on our list is Temi Ogunrinde. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, everyone. Good to be here again. My name is Tammy. As you remember, I'm the Equity and Engagement Director at Urban Homeworks, Vice Chair of Baje, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today regarding House File 11. Thank you, Chair Howard, and to each representative for moving this bill forward and the opportunity to testify on behalf of Urban Homeworks, our residents, and larger community in support of House File 11. Urban Homeworks is a nonprofit focused on affordable housing. We work to ensure families in North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, and St. Paul have safe, dignified housing that they can afford. We know firsthand that the need for affordable housing is great, but we cannot do it alone. House File 11 alleviates the burdensome reality of paying more than 30% of your income on housing, whether they live in affordable housing or not, because we know that even in housing that is considered affordable by HUD standards, families are still house burdened. As one of the few people of color in this room, I have to point out, time after time, our elected officials tout the importance of equity in our state, but stay complacent to inequitable practices and systemic racism. Allow me to break down the reality of how our systems benefit our white Minnesotans far greater than our BIPOC Minnesotans. Minnesota provides a subsidy to homeowners through the mortgage interest deduction. This subsidy disproportionately benefits white Minnesotans due to the disparities between white homeownership and BIPOC homeownership. However, funding toward rent subsidies are largely underfunded, a subsidy that would greatly benefit BIPOC families. Now is the opportunity for every legislator, regardless of political affiliation, to support true equity in the state of Minnesota or run the risk of showing that your words of support toward equity are hollow and performative. Simply put, supporting House File 11 is not only equitable, but the right thing to do. This bill has impact beyond North Minneapolis, beyond the Twin Cities, and beyond the metro area. A 2021 study done by Minnesota Housing Partnership showed that there is a high percentage of Minnesotans who are house burdened in Hennepin, Anoka, and Ramsey. However, there are higher concentrations of house burdened Minnesotans in the Itasca, Beltrami, Clay, Rice, and other greater Minnesota counties. Let me break it down further to some of your specific jurisdictions. Representative Dotseth, 43.6% of your constituents spend more than 30% of their income towards rent. For Representative Nash, 43.3%, Petersburg, 52.7%, and Myers, 52.3%. Supporting House File 11 is an opportunity to think beyond your families and friends and to think of the hardworking Minnesotans who are in need of real support and voted you in to provide that. The impact that House File 11 would have on Minnesota families is generational. With families only paying 30% of their income towards rent, they have the opportunity to pay for health care and other basic needs. It allows Minnesotans to never have to worry about choosing between paying for rent or putting food on the table. When you have stability and you start to dream, you can begin to do things like build an emergency savings fund, save for a down payment, or your child's college tuition. Last week, Representative Nash spoke to wanting to be able to see the fruit of his labor, and I don't fault him. I genuinely do too. But my hope is that each representative will desire that for their constituents just as much as they desire it for themselves. The reality is there are too many hardworking Minnesotans who have been unable to see the fruits of their labor due to skyrocketing rent and unaffordable housing. I would love for you all to just imagine with me. What if we created a Minnesota where the majority of the population isn't simply surviving? A Minnesota where the majority of hardworking Minnesotans are stable, and from that stability are able to now dream of what thriving looks like for themselves and their families. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like to call to see if there's any public testimony from the audience. All right. Not seeing any, we will move on to member discussion, but I also understand that there's an amendment from Representative Johnson. Is that correct?
Chair Bajie, I do have an amendment. It's, I can go through and explain it again, or we can just repeat what happened on the last bill. This is the exact same amendment. It's the A5 amendment. I'm going to move that. Again, we need to look at, make sure this grant fund money is spent properly, to get into the hands of those who need it, instead of going elsewhere. We have an issue not just in Minneapolis and in the metro area. We have rental and affordable housing issues across the state. When an apartment complex is, or apartment building is built in my community, before the shovel goes in the ground, the all the units are filled. Housing providers are looking at those situations. Unfortunately, I've had a lot of units built, but there is nothing available to rent right now. We have, like I say, I want to make sure that the funds are going where they need to go. Again, requires if it does go to a nonprofit, and we do have some housing authorities that are nonprofits, to make sure that the 990s are given not only to the legislature, the committees of jurisdiction, but also to the Attorney General's office, so that he can see what's going on, and if the things don't look properly, he can look into more issues to make sure that the funds are being used properly. Also, we have time to have rules and regulations and policies in place to make sure that there is proper oversight to these grants. I will stop there because I could go on and on and on. I have the report with me, and I do ask that all the members do read it, because there's a lot of good information in it.
Thank you, Representative Johnson, for your amendment. Are there other members that would like to speak to the amendment? All right. Seeing no further discussion. Chair Howard, would you like to say something?
Yeah, just briefly, Chair Bajie, I would ask members to oppose the amendment. I do think program integrity and accountability is important, and so I would like to work in if there's ways we can improve the bill in that way, but this amendment does have some challenges. And again, I think is a bit of a round peg in a square hole. In particular, the 1% and 2% administrative pieces would be a big burden and challenge on the local public housing authorities to administer this program. It is a very labor-intensive, human-intensive endeavor to sort of work with, do that casework and make the payment to the landlord. Putting those kinds of burdens would really make the program inoperable. In terms of the bill really envisions that local public housing authorities would be administering these programs and not nonprofits. So I would ask members to oppose the amendment.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Bajie, Representative Howard, I do appreciate your comments on this amendment. I do look at the 1% and 2% administrative costs as a way to get the funds out there. That way it also requires local buy-in, with the local authorities actually participating in it instead of just going off the state dollars.
Representative Howard, any other comments? Any other member comments to the amendment? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to the vote. Representative Johnson puts forward his amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. Closing comments. Or member discussion, sorry. Getting ahead of myself. I do have a list going. So Representative Petersburg, I'll put you on the list.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson's already on the list, but Representative Nash was first. So
thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, a couple questions. So this is a $4 billion biennial request. We have approximately a $17.6 billion surplus currently. Of that, $12 billion, give or take, is one-time money. So your request would effectively eat through the – it would eat up four of the $5 billion surplus, but that's only if we continue to run a surplus. How do you plan on paying for this if we don't have that remaining $5 billion surplus?
Representative Howard.
Representative, first, with your math, we have enough. We can do the whole enchilada. But to be frank, it is a big dollar amount, and it has to be considered in the context of our entire budget. So we can look at ways to sort of scale this in terms of which populations we want to serve. But I think there's value in taking the full picture and seeing what that would fully cost to do and the benefits of doing so.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, there wasn't really much of an answer there, Mr. Chair. I mean, you could do it if it was one-time money. But if we go into an economic downturn, there's no mechanism other than raising taxes here on how to do that if you were to do your full request.
Representative Howard.
It is ongoing. To a program like this that is ongoing, you wouldn't really be able to utilize one-time dollars. That's correct. Again, I would say, though, you look at a fiscal note, as I kind of mentioned in my comments, it carries those costs, but it does not look at the other side of the ledger at the sort of economic benefits, the reduced spending we'd see in other ways in our state budget. So it isn't quite a simple arithmetic that just looking at the fiscal note would indicate.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you. Remind me real quick, what's the referral on this bill?
We're laying this bill over.
Okay. And Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you. So I guess my first question is, you're going to spend a lot of money. How does this actually impact the inventory of current available housing, period? Because you and I have talked about this, and I've talked about this for a long time, and our members have talked about this. This is assuming that you have current steady state inventory. We still have a housing crisis. We're not building enough starter homes. We're not building enough apartment buildings. We're not actually encouraging investment in that. This does nothing to do that. And I certainly think that this is a subject that's got merit to talk about. Maybe not at $4 billion a year or biennium, but this does nothing to take away our inventory issues. Would you agree with that?
Representative Howard.
Representative Nash, I would agree with that, and it's a good question. And if all we did this session was just do this bill, that wouldn't address the full scope of our affordable housing crisis. And so we absolutely do need to produce more units of affordable housing. We've heard bills to do that. We're going to hear more. We do have to be in yes and mode, which is, a mantra I've kind of said over and over again.
And just to finish up, Madam
Nash.
Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm heartened by that. I'm still waiting to have a conversation when we get to talk about how do we build more starter houses. We haven't done that yet. But just to frame this, the last biennial budget, this ask is roughly 7% of the last biennial budget, and does nothing to impact the inventory that we have. This is a huge ask, and you admitted that on the intro. But I guess I don't want to send false hope to the people who came to this room and have been cheering you on, because you, in the first 2 seconds of questioning, you said, well, okay, it's a big ask, but we're going to probably have to dial it back because it's not realistic. And I hate trying to dash people's expectations, because you got a lot of applause. You stuck the landing with some of these folks. And I just think it's unfair to throw out this big vision and then the author says, well, okay, guys, here's the deal. We're not really doing this amount of money. I certainly think that there is a conversation to be had with this, but it's not doing anything to fix inventory. So all we're doing is saying in these widget holes that we have that we're not doing anything to increase the number of places we can put people, and I think that's myopic. And lastly, Mr. Chair, here at the legislature, we are oftentimes gaveled down when we question each other's motives. I would ask that you encourage your testifiers who actually did question our motives as to why we are encouraging certain things. I would have expected that you would have already addressed that.
Representative Nash, I think our testifiers are probably able to kind of speak to broader statements that they're hearing in the public, but I don't see that there was much disparagement per se. Representative Howard.
The only thing I would say to your comment, Representative Nash, is that in terms of why present this vision, you know, we don't do enough, and I don't think, in state government in terms of thinking big and thinking outside the box, and we can't accomplish big things unless we put big ideas on the table. And I'm not suggesting that we can snap a finger and realize this vision tomorrow, but by presenting a solution that meets the scope of the challenge, we can set our state on the course to do just that.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Bazzi, Chair Howard, I understand the concept of this bill. Housing is an issue across the state. The housing providers are doing everything they can to keep costs down. I noticed on in your bill on line 3.18, the appropriation is blank. It could be $1 million, $500,000, $2 billion. We don't know. But whatever that number is, the fiscal note has it costing over $2 million a year with 12.75 state employees to give money to other people to give money out. I guess one question I do have for you, I have some other thoughts as well. But can you tell me why it takes almost 13 people to hand out a grant when we have grant programs already in place?
Representative Howard.
Representative Igbaje, you know, the full bill would entail 200,000 vouchers going out into an equitable formula all across the state. And so to the program integrity piece, to your amendment, I think we do want to make sure that we're not shortchanging our agency acting as that pass-through entity to be able to do that. So that number didn't jump off the page to me, to be honest. From my perspective, we want folks to be in those positions to administer a program well. When we don't have enough resources to administer a program well, we run into problems. And then we hear about the problems on that end. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're adequately funding our agencies and our local housing authorities to administer a program well for Minnesotans and for landlords.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Abadji, Chair Howard. I was just crunching some numbers here. Even if we use $500 million, and you want to use, you didn't think 1% was enough to cover the costs, just at the state level, which, looking at this number, the fiscal note is $4 million. 1% to $500 million is $5 million more than what my amendment had. And I'm sure we're probably looking at a higher number than that with what you're looking at. I understand this program and what you're looking at doing. Another question I have for Rep. Chair Howard is this going to increase the amount of rental stock that we have from the housing providers? And is this going to lower the actual cost, or is this going to shift the cost?
Representative Howard.
Chair Igbaje, Representative Johnson, kind of referencing Representative Nash, this bill doesn't increase supply. We absolutely need to do that. A bill we heard earlier this session with housing infrastructure bonds, et cetera, the more holistic approach we can take, the better. But we absolutely do need to produce more homes.
Representative Johnson, any final comments?
Chair Howard, I understand the bill. I haven't decided how I'm going to vote on this yet, because it's still going to be laid over. But I guess one another thing that I'd like to see in this bill for these people that are getting these vouchers, and it should be all Section 8 vouchers, and especially for emergency assistance, is that total wraparound services are provided. Now, that's not in this bill. If we don't teach these people how to run a checkbook, how to run a household, how to pay their bills, making sure that they're looking for work if they need that part of it, making sure we're providing them educational services so they can get a decent job. We have thousands of jobs available, and a lot of them are good paying jobs, but we have a lot of people not qualified, and or they're way overqualified. We don't have in the middle. We need a lot of skilled employees, our carpenters, our plumbers, our electricians, our welders, our manufacturers, and construction people are just begging for those people. So I think we need to look at the holistic view in this and not just give a handout, because all a handout is keep people down. We have to make sure that when we help them, it's a hand up to make them a better person.
Representative Howard, any comments or no?
I want to make time for other members to ask questions.
All right, Representative Dossett.
Thank you, Representative Abaje and Chair Howard. Two-part question, I guess it'd be is, number one is, $2 billion, that's an awful lot of beads behind it. There are a lot of zeros right there. I think we'd all have to agree with that. And I appreciate your heart behind this bill. The question is number one would be, how much of an increase would this be from where it currently is right now with rental assistance? And number two is, accountability. I mean, I'm from Greater Minnesota, and my heart is for making sure that proper resources are going to Greater Minnesota. What mechanisms do we have to oversee this program to make sure that it's managed properly and that there's a proper oversight in this program? Thank you.
Representative Howard.
Chair Igbaje, Representative Dotseth, both good questions. I don't have the exact numbers of what the state currently spends on rental assistance. There are a few programs through Minnesota Housing, through their local trust fund, that they do some direct vouchers. Admittedly, this would be a massive expansion. I would say it's an area where the state hasn't really had much of a role. We've sort of deferred that to the federal government, and I think that's a problem. And so that, to the increase, it'd be a very large increase, and I would say warranted. To the oversight piece, what I would say is, again, because we're utilizing existing infrastructures with our public housing authorities that for years have administered Section 8, and where there is, to the guardrails and those kinds of things, I would be more concerned if we were sort of creating and spending $2 billion on a program that we're sort of setting up from scratch, but we're using local infrastructure that has some of those sort of oversight and guardrail mechanisms in place.
Representative Dossett.
Thank you, Chair Howard. With that said, have they managed that amount of monies in the past? I understand these. That's a concern I had, which is justifiable, and then Greater Minnesota, to make certain that we have proper proportions directing towards Greater Minnesota as well.
Representative Howard?
Chair Igbaje, to the last point, we have specific language in the amendment that deals with that equity piece statewide to make sure that these resources are delivered out equitably. That's important. And I think you raise a good point that we want to make sure we're not flipping a switch and asking our local authorities to have a lift that they can't take on, especially maybe our smaller local housing authorities in Greater Minnesota. So we have some flexibility built in. If a handful of Greater Minnesota local authorities want to work together and administer, we have enough flexibility to do that. But that's a really good point, that we don't want to sort of set up our local agencies to fail, so to speak.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg, I apologize.
Thank you. No problem, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, you've used the word the bill will be laid over, and I just want to clarify what that means, because I've been in committees where it's meant two different things. One is meant to lay over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The other one is lay over for a later passage and moving on. Which are you considering for this pathway of this particular bill?
Representative Howard.
Representative Peter, laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Manager.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and thank you for that clarification. So what everything that I'm about to say has nothing to do with the merits of rental assistance and the needs that we have to do. So I am here just with concerns about the process and the finances that are there. And the first thing that I see is under on page 1.13, the definition of eligible household, which the first threshold is that the household has to have an annual income of no more than 50% of the median income in the area. And I'm not sure that's exactly what you meant, because if you have two people in the household both making minimum wage and the average income in this in that particular area is $40,000, they each could be making $25,000 a piece and would no longer be eligible, even though their rental may be 30% or more of the household's income. So you may want to look at that, because I think that may be a point of clarification. The other piece that I do have a question for, and I'm not sure if you can answer it, Mr. Chair, or somebody from fiscal staff, I am curious to know what is the previous biennial's total budget for housing committee's responsibility, if we have that.
Chair Igbalje, Representative Petersburg, the general fund appropriation for Minnesota housing in the current biennium has a current law base of $115 million. The actuals for fiscal year 22 and 23 are $125
million. Thank you, Attorney Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And I thought it was somewhere in that area. And so thank you for that clarification. This would increase that budget to over $4 billion, which is a big ask. And so my question to you, Mr. Chair, is do you have kind of a wink from the leadership or something that you're going to get that target? Because, I mean, that's a pretty big ask for beyond what you're doing. And not that it's not worth it. Please understand that we certainly could spend it here. But do we know that we're actually going to get something like that?
Representative Howard.
Representative Bajaj, I wish I had that wink. But what I will say is that I think that we are there's greater recognition that kind of the status quo of just kind of inching along. You know, right now, the housing finance budget is 0.4% of our state budget. I think that there's a lot of members that I've talked with that think we really ought to bump that up and sort of change the game. And this is a game-changing type of a proposal. We would need a game-changing sort of target in housing to be able to do something of significance. But, no, I don't have any sort of wink and a nod yet from the speaker. I wish I did.
Representative Petersburg, final comments.
Yeah, thank you. Just one final comment. I just wish you well in getting that, and I will be looking forward to seeing how this gets fit into your omnibus bill at the end of the time. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, before we continue, we have only about an additional 5 minutes, so we'll go quickly through the next three members, starting with Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Igbalje and Representative Howard. Today was a good day for housing, and I want to say that, you know, on a day where it's housing day on the Hill, that we're laying down the tracks and putting the legs to a stool. You know, we have just talked about housing trust fund that's going to increase supply and allow local communities to tailor it to their communities and needs. We have this Bring It Home rental assistance, and we also have the pathway to home bill that is also being worked on, where today we heard that, you know, 20-year-olds have the same mortality rate as 50-year-olds because our youth are so highly disproportionately represented in our homeless population, and that's LGBTQ and black and brown youth. Elders are some of our highest folks that we're seeing experiencing homelessness. If you haven't read the Minnesota Homelessness Mortality Report, I encourage you to read that. But I wanted to chime in on folks who are experiencing homelessness are hardworking and brilliant, incredible people. That it's not just about knowing how to manage your money. It's about having systems that put you at the margin and force you to live there. You know, in this data, we can talk about the folks who are working $10 an hour minimum wage has to work 70 hours a week to afford a single-bedroom apartment. So I just want to put that into context of who it is that we're talking about. These are our relatives and our loved ones. And today, a really fierce youth named Leah asked us during the Pathways press conference, this is really great. This is dollars that's going to go, to your point, to make sure that our local organizations across the state are serving our communities in equitably, culturally responsive ways and geographically distributed. But she also asked, like, what more are you doing as elected officials? And I was really proud that we were able to stand up there and tell her these three things that we are putting forward, that we can't afford to not do it. And one of the things that I'm struck by is that we keep going around and around about the supply and the affordability. And I didn't know until I was reading through the materials that it's my understanding that actually one of the things that holds us up with creating more affordable housing is this aspect between the developers and securing finance for the federal voucher programs. And I'm reading here that it says if every eligible household were to receive a Bring It Home Minnesota voucher, it would expedite the construction of deeply affordable housing across the state, as well as decrease the cost on those emergency shelter and services for folks who are experiencing homelessness and the investments that we're seeking to make. So I'm curious, Chair Howard, if that is accurate, or if you can help us actually, you know, setting forward this trajectory. I appreciate that we're calling out the specific dollar amount that we would need to vision towards, dream towards, and if this is actually part of being able to build towards more affordable housing, it's really exciting. And thank you for your work.
Representative Howard, any?
Quickly, thank you. You make a very good point. You know, I talked about how we need to increase supply by the sort of tools we have at the legislature, but even by virtue of doing something like this, I think could incent, as you said, the creation, especially of the deeply affordable that's been so hard to build.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Howard, for bringing this bill forward and in your leadership in this space. You know, I'm here to affirm that the challenges of housing is true in my community. You know, there are 80,000 Hmong Americans in Minnesota, in which I guarantee you 80% of those had used some kind of housing assistant in the past. I am a recipient of housing vouchers. I'm a refugee from Thailand. I grew up here in St. Paul on the corner of Dell University. These disparities are real. You know, the insecurity in education, the outcomes, all those are real. We must continue to invest into Minnesotans and families, you know. And I just want to note that the investment that the state of Minnesota made into the Hmong community 48 years ago brought 9 legislators of Hmong descent to the state capitol, and I am one of those. So I want to note here that the investment was well taken. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cha. Representative Howard, any final comments?
I'll be brief since I know we're long on time. I really want to thank members on both sides for the discussion on the bill and thank everyone who came here today. And I'll just end by saying let's bring it home.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Members, this bill is being laid over as amended, and our next hearing will be tomorrow, February 8th, and we'll have 3 bills on manufactured housing. With that, we are adjourned.